The contest at Sam Houston Race Park this weekend is shaping up to be one of the better qualifying events of the entire season. 40 entries so far. It's limited to 100, but it's hard to know how many are going to be there. The prizes are guaranteed, though, so you want to keep that in mind. You've got two NHC seats on the line as well as NHC tour points. This is going to be on Saturday. Races consist of all the Houston races, plus Keeneland, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita during the window. So the Wood will be in there, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita Derby. For more information, be sure to check out inthemoneypodcast.com/SHRP. Speaking of contests, if you can't be at Sam Houston, you have the opportunity to play in a $1,500 contest over at ExpressBet. It's the Santa Anita Derby Challenge, 100% of entry fees paid out as cash prizes. You can play on track at Santa Anita or online as ExpressBet, as noted. Contest races, all the races at Santa Anita on Saturday. Players must wager at a minimum the whole $1,000 bankroll during the contest. It's going to be a great day, excellent opportunity to get involved and win some seats as well as some cash prizes. To learn more, go to expressbet.com/tournaments. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for the racing on Saturday, April 6th, opening Saturday at Keeneland, a stakes-laden card. A little bit later, we will be talking about Hawthorne Racing. Very happy to have them in the fold. And we're also going to talk a little JRA and Forever Young with Alex Henry a bit later on. So stick around. Going to have a lot of fun. We kick things off with a man who joined us for our opening day Keeneland show. He's back again today. He's Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
I'm doing great, Pete. You clearly can't get rid of me.
Just wait. We're going to keep you around for one more show for Keeneland on Sunday. We will mix it up. We're running around, though, with the fact that I had an hour of your time to exploit on this Thursday night as we record, I wasn't going to let you get away without having to do all three of these opening weekend shows. So thank you for being a sport about it, my friend.
You had stars in your eyes knowing that I had looked at these races, and I am totally fine with it. It is A-okay.
It is nice when you know somebody else has like fully done the work early, because when you're trying to, you know, I'm just going to be running around like such a nut. We had to get this stuff in the books. And, you know, I know a ton of people who look at this, but most people's process doesn't have them doing these races when they draw, which I assume is what you do to make the morning lines.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I do have to do them on draw day. So in fact, I have one tonight that I owe for tomorrow. Tomorrow is my first quote unquote day off of making morning lines, because the woman who I send the morning lines to. So shout out to Cindy Palmer in the racing office at Keeneland. She doesn't work. Excuse me. Oh gosh.
You all right over there?
Yeah, I'm good. She doesn't work on Saturdays. So I actually send Friday and Saturdays for the following week on Sunday. But of course then you don't want to have two to do on one night. It's also my daughter's school's auction on Saturday night. So the last thing I need to do is be up until 3 o'clock in the morning, making odds on Sunday morning. But yeah, anyway, nobody out there cares about my schedule. I have very little free time, but I like it that way.
There you go. Daily doubles at Keeneland. This great news, reduced from 22% takeout down to 15%. They are going to be at the forefront of our consciousness throughout this meet, as will one of our favorite bets, the All Turf Pick 3 that we're going to be covering. We'll be doing at least the Turf Pick 3 every day. We're not going to be able to help throwing in bonus coverage, though, as we ended up doing the whole Pick 5 on opening day. And we're going to be doing the Pick 5 here, starting with some stakes action in race number 6. It's the Commonwealth. We've got a 7-furlong dirt affair. How do we want to light this candle?
Yeah, you know, good edition of this race with a lot of contention in here. And it was a tough race to make the morning line for, as most people will realize in looking at it, because it was a race where, you know, I wouldn't call the favorite all that embraceable. And I will admit, I'm not going to be completely shocked if I actually got the favorite in here wrong. But boy, was it hard to not make Minnesota Reddy the favorite. I know he's coming out of a race run on slop. He's not really been the most consistent dirt horse, but that was an awfully big step forward in the Colonel Power, off the turf or not. Pirate Rick and Just Might are good horses that he just blew by in the stretch. Yep. And it felt like that'd be enough for him to probably end up going off the favorite. I didn't want to give Raise Cane short shrift given his prior efforts over to this track and his run in the Perryville last fall. Even though he's coming back off a layoff, he did run in the Malibu and obviously ran into some very good horses that day. I thought one of the interesting horses coming up in class was Wyco, who lost a three life allowance race last time. And you generally wouldn't consider these horses very much from a wagering perspective, but with it being Wesley Ward and with the quality of that race he ran at Keeneland in October, you kind of have to give him some attention and you have to at least make him part of the conversation. So, you know, I would pick Raise Cane. He feels like the kind of horse that's most trustworthy. I thought Saez was a really good fit for him, and I like the ride he got in the Perryville. As you know, Saez is one of those guys that's really good at kind of shoving a horse into the race down the backstretch. And Keeneland, the Keeneland main track in general, to me, is one where it's generally advantageous to be forward. And so he felt like a horse who'd be forward again. And he, you know, when push comes to shove, is probably one of, if not the best horse in the race. So I just wanted to keep it simple and kind of land there. And I'll use every bit of the 2, 4, and 9. I don't have a strong lean against any of them. I don't really have an upsetter. I wish I did. I could maybe get with the idea of Manny Wah, but he's got to run better than he has of late. And you know, I think Will Walden is a good up-and-coming trainer, but this might be just a little too much for this horse.
I was going to try a price here, and this is a horse coming off a long layoff, and I might be falling into the potential trap of betting a horse that could end up being the second or maybe even third best closer. But Call Me Fast, I just think the last race was a total toss, very, very difficult trip. I thought it was a trip two back two moving into a fast pace, and that those races 3 and 4 back I thought could go close and look like a horse to me that might be suited to the 7 furlong. So I was going to take a little bit of a shot based on the good Call Me Fast races that maybe they could cook up front and this one could come running. You know, maybe Minnesota Reddy joins the party too early. Maybe Saez gets, as you were suggesting too, a bit aggressive with a runner like Raise Cane. Can you see Call Me Fast if you sprint, or do you think I'm eating paste in the corner?
I mean, the two Keeneland races back in 22 make you think, yeah, and there's really a case to be made here, but I fear that he might just be in a little bit too negative a scenario pace-wise. I tell myself all the time to be very careful with off-the-pace horses on the main track at Keeneland.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't seem to really make up the ground that you want them to. So that would be my big worry. But, you know, I think you could do worse in terms of finding a live 8 or 10 to 1 shot. I mean, the horse in here that could end up taking a little bit of money that I don't really know what to do with at all is Hear My Song, because he won this race last year at 11 to 1, and he did kind of come over the top from off of a relatively modest pace that day. But I don't know if he's good enough, and you know, he's not coming into it in particularly great form either, with just the one race on the synthetic at Turfway. So that was why I gravitated towards the ones that I thought were going to be a little bit more backed.
No, I'm glad you mentioned Hear My Song, though, based on that, based on the fact that a winner of this race coming in a very similar pattern, a 6th place finish on the synth. But yeah, I was just going to try to get a little cute there, go 8, 9 and see what could happen. Let's talk about the Appalachian 3-year-old fillies on the turf going 1 mile and a big full field of 12 going postward. Buchu is a horse, or Buku, I think they say, a horse that had plenty of wise guy buzz for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf, and I thought had an excuse running against the flow and still being okay. I thought was worth a long look in here. You installed as a 4 to 1, definitely one of the ones in the betting. Another horse of a similar price, the 5 Cairo, I thought was worth a long look as a Group 3 winner, now in the hands of Cherie DeVoe, who certainly wins her share of races here. And we've seen the grade 3, the Group 3 form from overseas generally portends horses who can be successful at the graded stakes level. And another one I wanted to mention was the 1, Poolside with Slim,
as a horse who had a chance to be the best speed. And I just wanted to make the note that my best guess is that last time was probably the time for the 10 runner Pounce, who we talked about on these airwaves, who I was willing to let beat me from the 10 post against an intriguing group of horses. 9-5 on the A line, the one on the B line for me. Well, let's start actually with Pounce. Are you with or against in this spot?
Yeah, you know, it was still a great pick by you last time on her. And I'm not really sure where that race came from. Still trying to figure out how she came from so deep in the pack after getting involved in a really hot pace the time before that. But yeah, I mean, she has the classic profile of a last time was the time, right? She was 9-1. You're going to have to take a third of that roughly. We don't really know what her preferred running style is. She seemed to finish with a great amount of alacrity. My inclination in these 3-year-old turf races as we get towards the Derby and then to go on from there is to be very critical of the Gulfstream form. I don't necessarily feel that way about Tampa, but I think you need to be very, very critical of the Gulfstream turf form. I just think things happen down there that don't really happen anywhere else. And, you know, over the years, we've seen a lot of those horses perform really well at Gulfstream and really fall on their face wherever they went. So I'm going to take the anti approach to Pounce as well, to answer your first question.
And what numbers will be on your tickets?
So I like Buku as well. I had kind of some of the same thoughts as you did. I really liked Buku and Poolside with Slim. And, you know, I say be careful with Gulfstream turf form, and I'm going to go ahead and talk up a horse that has Santa Anita turf form. But I've been a fan of Mo Fox Given, who I think might actually be a bit better horse than her running lines indicate. She's had some things happen in some of her races out there that kind of exaggerated some of her losing performances. And I think she's probably a little bit better than she looks on paper. She's going to have to elevate her game, but I thought she was a little intriguing at what could be a pretty decent price. And she's going to be in an honestly run race. There's going to be some pace in front of her. I'm not going to be altogether shocked if Poolside with Slim has a relatively easy lead in here. And I do think she's dangerous in that scenario. But yeah, give me the 1-8-9 as my main horses. I don't know exactly what to make of the 5 Carryou, who is making her North American debut for Cherie DeVoe. This is not something Cherie has done a great amount. But of course, she did it with Star Fortress at Churchill, who ran a race that we're still trying to figure out where the hell it came from. So, you know, it's something that you want to at least recognize as a past occurrence and not be shocked by this one running well too, because, you know, now the running line from Dundalk, where Mountain Bear beat her in just a listed stake race, looks better with Mountain Bear coming back and running second in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf.
Let's move on to grade one action in the Madison. Fillies and mares 4 and up, 7 furlongs on the dirt. A race where I thought that the 8 Vava might just prove too tough for these. Admirable filly, done well over a variety of configurations, and I thought was just going to get the absolutely perfect trip in here, sitting behind the speed. There's certainly other ways to go, some other talented fillies, but I just kept coming back to Vava. How do you see it?
Yeah, similarly, you know, it felt like the favorites probably dominated on paper. I think that if Vava does not win this race, it's almost certainly going to be because Alvastar wired them, or because Red Carpet Ready put enough pressure on Alvastar to weaken her and maybe grab the baton at the 8th pole and held on, because she is a very gritty filly. So that's kind of what it boiled down to me. The only other horse I could have made any case for was Sterling Silver, who, you know, looking at it kind of in a vacuum, has actually been very good for the last 8 months or so, including that win at Tampa last out. I mean, she didn't beat much, but she didn't really have much occasion to win that race. There was not much pace on, and she really grinded it out. I also really like the way Javier Castellano has ridden this horse consistently. She is a filly who, it seems like, doesn't really love getting the stick used all that much, and so he's really hands and heels on her more often than not. I think it's impressive. It shows his level of horsemanship as well. So I'm kind of a Sterling Silver fan. Not going to shock me if she gets a piece of this. I thought the win might be out of her range, but I would use the 2, 6, and 8 and just kind of move on.
2, 6, and 8 for Nick in the grade one Madison. Next up, the Shakertown, 5.5 furlongs on the turf. I'll before I ask you who you like in the race, I'll ask you this. Have you ever seen a turf sprint graded stake with so little speed?
You know, it's funny. I was actually on another show before I came on with you, and it was the exact comment I made, where it's really rare to see an overflow field sprinting on the turf with, you know, kind of one confirmed speed horse. And that horse is breaking from the 12 and doesn't exactly have Jorge Chavez in the irons. Right. I mean, Junior Alvarado is not a guy known for really sending hard out of the gate. So yeah, it's a really odd circumstance. And ultimately it's what led me the direction of the horse I picked, which is the 11 Coppola. And, you know, I'm going to die on the hill of Coppola being a horse that has just completely turned the corner. I might find out the hard way that he just came to life in South Florida. And a lot of times what happens in South Florida stays down there, but this is a horse who's been good in Kentucky in the past. He's been good in New York. He just might be getting good now as a five-year-old. I thought he was very efficient in both the Gulfstream Park Turf Sprint and the Silks Run. He was a crazy 7-1 in his last start and got the win that day. So I'm looking for him to run back and run well. I think he's a horse that's going to be a relatively decent price again. I like that it looks like Dale Romans has just gotten him into form and trains him lightly to keep him so. These sprinters mainly train themselves. So I'm gonna single Coppola. I'm just going to use a couple of backups because this to me is a race where if you psych yourself out, you're going to find yourself going 6 or 7 deep and it just might not need it, right? It just might not be a race where you have to really have that kind of coverage. So I'll single Coppola. I'm going to back up with Arzak and I'm going to go on with it.
All right. I mean, hey, leave it to the Italian Americans to both pick Coppola. I thought you were going to accuse me of being a homer because of the Sport of Kings Racing Partners connection here, Nick, but I'm glad to see you have a case very similar to mine. He's just going to get such a great trip in this spot. Dale's been talking about this race for him since before the last race, which I love when we had him on in a segment fairly recently. So yeah, we're in lockstep. I was going to probably throw Yes, I Am Free in there just as a little backup because it, you know, anytime you have a chance to pick a horse who could be clear in a 5.5 furlong race. But yeah, that's more as a backup for me. And Arzak, if I were to use a third one, Arzak, who you mentioned as a backup, would be the other. But in my initial notes that I'll send around to Plus, I just wrote it down 11 as an A, 12 as a B for you. I've got the 11 as an A and the 6 as a B as we move on to the race that gives the day its name. What an interesting edition of the Bluegrass this is. We'll probably give it a little bit of short shrift here just in the interest of time because we've covered it so much elsewhere, but obviously need to get your thoughts on this one. I'm team Sierra Leone. I think the race is just going to be run absolutely perfectly to suit. And I have my questions about Dornick based on the last run, based on what I thought was a bias-aided win in the Remsen. What do you think of Sierra Leone and all the rest in the Bluegrass?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this is supposed to be his coming out party. I don't love that he's gotten to be immensely popular, and that's leading to him probably being a little overrated in the sense that, you know, he really shouldn't have been... He shouldn't have been such a big favorite in some of these future pools, and he's probably not supposed to be a really big favorite in here. But he's a horse with a lot of talent. He did something in an impressive way last time out that you really didn't expect. It looks as if that was a stronger race than pretty much any prep up to this point, given some of the subsequent performances coming out of it. And, you know, we might find out prior to this race that it was a stronger race than we even thought with Resilience running in the Wood Memorial on Saturday. So he's my pick. He's clearly the one to beat. I think the way that I try and get some equity in here is by completely tossing Dornock. I don't have a ton of interest in this horse. And I think, you know, I kind of mentioned to you, and I know it's not a particularly charitable comment on my part, but the whole idea of him not being cranked for the Fountain of Youth, I think it's sort of silly. I don't think that there are a lot of opportunities for these horses on the road to the Derby for a trainer to not have a horse cranked for a race. And I mean, you just can't ignore that. I mean, this horse got a very soft trip on the lead. He beat a very questionable field and those horses came back and completely embarrassed themselves in the Florida Derby. Now I know the winner embarrassed pretty much everybody, but the 2, 3, 4 finishers didn't run a step in the Florida Derby. So it's an indictment of Dornock to me. He's a horse that's going to get pressure from his inside and outside. And I'm not willing to take him at a short price. The key to the race in terms of betting it from a multi-race perspective and from a horizontal, from a vertical perspective, is what are you doing with Just a Touch? Because Just a Touch is going to be very popular in here. He's a horse with some really tremendous sheet numbers. And I think his Gotham was probably, it was solid. It wasn't what was expected, given that he was a 17-10 favorite in there. But this is a horse with a massive amount of ability, Pete. And I think ignoring that, overlooking it, is a huge mistake.
I think if we're willing to toss Dornick, you can use both of Sierra Leone and Just a Touch. I mean, it's not my favorite thing to do, having two of the three horses who are going to be bet pretty heavily. But I think it's the kind of thing where I will have Sierra Leone as a pressed up A and Just a Touch as more of a saver. The other horse I'll mention, and this could be an owner picked spot and I end up with egg on my face, but I think the horse will be a big enough price to try. BU is worth discussing. This horse had all manner of buzz before the first race, obviously took a while to get going and needed the cut back to 7 furlongs to really look like a proper racehorse. But you have a chance here to have a horse with the highest last figure, bred to go long for top connections at a good price. I don't need to lose to this horse in some of the pick bets. So I'll include BU also as a backup, knowing full well this could be an owner pick spot and he'll be sprinting for the rest of the year. But what do you make of BU? Can you see him if you sprint?
My problem with BU is that there was a remarkable jump forward in his two performances with Lasix. That's my concern. But, you know, what you can't deny about BU is that he is a horse that ran a speed figure last time out that actually compares very favorably to his competition. Yep. So you want to be careful about ignoring him. He also feels like a horse that, you know, on paper, he's supposed to be good routing. I do fear, like you do, that ultimately cutting back may be what he wants coming out of this race. But yeah, he was no inside baseball, but I did have the probables for the bluegrass early, given that they wanted the odds made at draw time, and he was a late addition. So yep, he was a horse that was not originally intended to be here and is in it because what the hell? I mean, Micropoli might as well have as many in the gate as possible, and then he can lobby to have the field size reduced and increase his chances of winning.
And I have no inside info, by the way, about the owner pick spot thing. It just felt, doesn't it feel that way?
It feels very much that way. I don't think you need to be too careful on that limb.
Yeah. And I'm not even being critical. Like, hey, you pay for the horses, you pay for their care. You want to have runners in the biggest races, but by all means, go for it. Usually owner picked spot is one of my favorite things to bet against, but this is a weird situation where you get this horse with the best last buyer. Like I said, going to be 8-1 like that. I feel so bad when those horses beat me that I almost don't mind throwing them in for a penny based on that, especially in a situation where we can create some equity by leaving out Dornick. We'll see. Dornick, maybe the narratives are right and we're wrong. We will find out on Saturday, or at least get a good data point on that on Saturday, which closes with race 11 at Keeneland, 6:26, the scheduled post time for this turf allowance race. When it comes to all these late picks, Nick, on Keeneland on Saturday, how are we going to get paid?
Yeah, what a nice race to close the card. I mean, I think Running B is going to be a pretty strong favorite, deservedly so. You know, no big argument from me on that. He's a horse who's shown some real ability. He was a good second in the Tampa Bay. He was a 6-5 favorite in the Fort Lauderdale 2-back. So he looks like a pretty obvious fit here. You know, where he wants to be situated early is part of the question. He's run his two best races when he's been isolated on the lead. He's not going to be. There are two confirmed speed horses to his outside, maybe even three, that are going to keep him from doing that. But he looked like clearly the horse to beat. I didn't have any reason to give a go on a big rant against him. I thought Masterpiece was interesting at what should be a relatively square price. He was good winning the Red Smith 2 starts back, faltered in the Pegasus, which is no big deal. He is a horse that Rick Dutrow came right out and said runs better in cooler weather. And he attributed that to his poor Arlington Million performance. We've heard Rick Dutrow make kind of odd comments about horses in the past. And a lot of times those horses run well. So I don't want to be too critical of anything that he said. And I could see Masterpiece getting a piece of this thing at a big price.
5-3, is that how I should write down your picks in the last?
Yeah, 3-5. I mean, I'll end most of my stuff with Running B. He's supposed to win this race, but I won't be beaten by Masterpiece.
I certainly respect him, but and I agree with that he's going to be bet hard. I just thought there was an opportunity for to get a little bit creative here. So the one I'm going to try to mess around with a little bit is the number 8 Injunction, based on some pretty basic angles. One, I think the horse has an interesting blend of speed and stamina to get the right kind of trip. Another, second off layoff. Another, back on the right surface. This is a horse I thought, all in all, ran okay given the pace scenario in the River City. I just that race I don't think is quite as bad as a sixth place finish indicates. I think this horse might have a little bit more to give, and most importantly, I think the horse is going to be a very big price. And if I'm going to use him, probably need to use the 4 Dominican Power, who set that pace there in the River City. Those were the two I was most interested in focusing on to try to maybe get a little bit of price to close things out in this allowance race. And if I get there alive to those two, that'll give me opportunities to maybe think about saving in exactas with runners like the two that you mentioned there on top, Running B and Masterpiece. Good stuff, Nick. We've got a lot more show to come, so we'll put a pin in this conversation, and we'll come back and get your thoughts one more time this weekend on the Sunday All Turf Pick 3 with maybe a little bonus stakes coverage in a special show that'll drop for Sunday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
We'll be back right after this.
Today's show also brought to you by our friends at NYRA. We've got a whole other show covering the NYRA Pick 6 that we want you to definitely go out and check out. Stephen Crist, Jonathan Kinchin, and myself giving thoughts on that one. Look for that one in your feed. Also, just want to remind folks that America's Day at the Races will be on Saturday covering the road to the Kentucky Derby, which passes through New York. You can hear what Maggie and Acacia and JK and Richie and the rest of the team have to say. To get the full schedule for those America's Day at the Races broadcasts, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/TV.
Next up on the show, happy to bring back a returning guest who's part of our JRA team. We have some fun plans for her this year, too. We're not going to announce it just yet, but she's going to be part of our, I'll just say this, she's going to be part of our extended Breeders' Cup coverage this year on the In the Money Media Network. But here today to talk about the big action in Japan on Saturday night into Sunday morning, the Oka Show. She is Alex Henry. Alex, what's going on?
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me, as always. Super excited to be here. Amazing weekend of racing on both hemispheres of the world.
It is going to be great to see all of this action. And it's been great international action coming fast and furious these last few weeks. In fact, before we look forward, let's look back a little bit to talk about a horse I know you've had interest in for quite some time and written about over on inthemoneypodcast.com. Highly recommend folks check out Alex's work over on the site there, which you can find all of by searching for her name. But Forever Young, an impressive winner over in the UAE Derby. Just curious, as you, someone who follows the JRA very closely, follows the three-year-old scene here very closely, any thoughts you have on how Forever Young might fit in with the rest of this potential Kentucky Derby winning contingent?
Absolutely. So Forever Young is just such an exciting horse. I know we say that every year, with the Japanese coming over, the UAE Derby winners coming over to the Kentucky Derby, but he's just very exciting. Really not much has gone his way in 2024 trip-wise. He's really had to carve his own way around the racetrack as a three-year-old. I really think he did not like that Saudi Derby track. It was very sandy and deep. He fought, and eventually got there in the end, ground away, and finally was able to win. And then last out in the UAE Derby, I also think he didn't have the best of trips either, and fought Audubon, who essentially was running the race of his life in deep stretch. And it was really those two. And I know the field wasn't the best, but he just has that. He has that dog in him, to be quite honest. Yep, he has that penchant to win. And hey, what can you ask for and a young three-year-old when we have horses that are at the top of our list who are throwing a clunker, one, you know, first out as a three-year-old and then win for fun by 13 next out. So you know what I'm talking about. And Fierceness, a horse that is great, But yeah, Forever Young really excites me, and definitely have some dollars on him come Derby Day. Of course, provided he gets there healthy and safe, which we hope he does.
Definitely. I thought that in the post-race interview was interesting, not least because your colleague on our JRA team was there in the winner's circle doing the interviews, Toshi Onokubo doing the translating. I thought it was fascinating hearing all the concerns they had about the kickback coming out of Saudi. I will admit that was the thing that made me the most nervous about Forever Young's prospects in the Derby. I mean, it's going to be awfully hard. It felt like he was ridden carefully to avoid kickback the other day in a field where, you know, he was able to, it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't a good trip really, but it was almost like I thought maybe a trip that was by design in terms of keeping him from having any cover because of fear of the kickback. That's going to be hard to replicate under the Twin Spires. Do you have any concerns about the kickback specifically when it comes to Forever Young in the first Saturday in May?
You know, it would concern me more if he couldn't do what he did and win the last two races
right
from the outside at the distances that he did. So essentially, he's already pretty much run a mile and a quarter by running so wide in the UAE Derby, that being, what, that's a mile and 3/16, right? Yep. So, and he did it from, what, about parked five wide or so. So I'm, you know what, he has the stamina to do that outside trip to avoid kickback in the Derby. I'll probably like to see, he's the kind of horse, if he draws 18, like I think Derma did last year, if he draws 18 post, then I'll have no problem with that. Like, that won't concern me at all. He'll just be able to hopefully, you know, use a little bit of gate speed, get out there and just sit, probably parked about 7-8 wide at Churchill, and we'll see what he can do, see if he's good enough in the stretch. But I'm excited, as always, for the Derby prospect.
Some days at Churchill, you can be 7 wide's a lot, but some days, you know, 4 wide, 5 wide there is effectively the same as the rail. Like, it's a track where you can go wide. So that's a good point in his favor. You talked about how he basically already has run a mile and a quarter, so this question less important than it usually is. But as someone who is a student of pedigree and who's written about this very topic, on his blood, how would you assess his chances to get a mile and a quarter this early in his career?
Oh, he's built for it. You know, his sire, Real Steel, won the Dubai Turf in 2016. His Dam Forever Darling does have, I don't believe she won beyond a mile and an eighth, but she is a stakes winner. She won the Santa Ynez Stakes in 2016. And of course, Real Steel, sire being by my favorite Japanese horse of all time, Deep Impact, winner of over at 3,200 meters, which is longer than we really go here in the States very often, except for the marathon days. So he's very well equipped with a very nice blend of American speed and then that deep Japanese stamina they breed for. That's why they buy a lot of our mares, especially our fast mares. And we'll see when we talk about the Oka Show, there's one filly in there who has this blend as well. They love our speed on the dam side, and then they pair it with these stallions that have won in a mile and a half, the Japanese classic distance, have won over 3,000 meters, 3,200 meters, 2 miles. So yeah, I think he is just very well equipped to get the mile and a quarter.
Well, it's like you've done this before, because you've made the perfect segue for me as we turn our attention to the Oka Show, the Japanese 1,000 guineas, and you've tipped your hand that you have one you like in here. Let's start with that one.
Yes. So on pedigree alone, Queen's Walk is a dynamo. I'm very excited to see her run. So right now, odds, and the odds I'm giving today are all projected. There's, I don't believe the betting has opened officially yet in Japan. I believe it opens tomorrow, which is Saturday for them. So she's projected at odds of 6.0, so that's second place. She gets Yuga Kawada in the irons, and she's our great Group 3 Queen Cup winner, which is one of the common prep races for the Philly Spring Classics. She is out of Wavell Avenue. She's by Kazuna, who is by Deep Impact. And she's out of Wavell Avenue, who you may recognize as Canadian bred 2015 Breeders' Cup Philly and Mare Sprint winner. Wavell Avenue has had success in Japan. She was bred to Frankel and produced the 2021 Group One Asahi High Futurity winner, Grenadier Guards. So it has that precocious, you know, ability, that ability to produce precocious horses. And with Kazuna on the sire side, being by Deep Impact, will really influence the stamina. And I'm really hoping that she'll be a big factor here in the Japanese Filly Classics.
That sounds like a very compelling case. Wavell Avenue, that was a thrilling win. I can't believe it was that long ago. If you'd made me guess what year that was, I wouldn't have said it was nearly 10 years. But also with that success as a broodmare, all potential, very, very interesting runner in this race. Queen's Walking at a bettable price on anybody's shortlist, I would suppose. But that's not going to be too bet off the boards. Who do you see as the main danger to Queen's Walk?
Main danger for sure is Ascoli Pacheno. Excuse me, I'm pronouncing these wonderful European names of these Japanese horses. So this filly is definitely going to be your favorite. Right now she's projected at 4.8 odds. I think she'll be much lower, closer to the twos probably. She's unbeaten 3 for 3. Daughter of Daiwa Major, himself by Sunday Silence, out of a winning Dane Hill Dancer mare. And she is our Hanshin Juvenile Fillies winner and our champion two-year-old filly in Japan. She's just a dynamo. She doesn't like to lose. She won't lose. Her last 3 furlong times, so, you know, last 3 furlongs of her races have been extremely fast. They've all been under 34 seconds. Last out, she ran 33.7, previously 33.3. It's the fastest in the field by 0.1 of a second. But hey, when you're closing that fast and when the margins are so slim, as they often are in Japanese racing, that 0.1 may make a difference. And she's definitely the filly to beat in my book.
Sounds like a potential exacta saver there if you want to bet Queen's Walk to win and maybe cover with Ascoli Pacheno, which is, I think, a town in Italy, if my memory is serving me correctly there. Good call on the European name. That might be a wagering approach that makes sense.
Yes. And you know what? Let's make it a trifecta with Stellenbosch, who before the Hanshin Juvenile Fillies last year was the greatest threat to Ascoli Pacheno. And she's projected to be your third favorite around odds of 6.7. She kind of has ran into hard luck because she keeps running into Ascoli Pacheno. She finished second to her in the Hanshin Juvenile Fillies. And if you look at the replay, she did not have a very good trip around the far turn at all. She had Christophe Lemaire in the irons that day and had to dive towards the inside to really take aim at Ascoli Pacheno, who was just too tough and just repelled her by a head. So it really was those two fighting it out that day. But I really think Queen's Walk can come in there. And I think if you wanted to key Queen's Walk or key Ascoli Pacheno with Stellenbosch and, you know, and Queen's Walk in there as well, for a trifecta, I think that would be a good option. You know, not a very lucrative option. I do have one long shot you can throw in there if you want to get spicy.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think this, hear me out, a filly named Et Vous Prey. And I had to look up how to pronounce that. And I used the Japanese katakana to pronounce that properly. She's the number 15 horse, beautiful gray filly. She's a speedball. And she was able to win the Group 2 Filly's Review at Hanshin. So same course. The Filly's Review was over 7 furlongs. So one furlong shorter. But she won at Hanshin in March 10th. And did it on the front end. And there's not... I mean, there's a couple of fabled speed horses I can think of throughout Japanese racing lore history, but Et Vous Prey outran her odds that day. She was 35.2. I believe she was the 10th choice, if I'm not mistaken. And she held off Corazon Beat to win that race. And she actually earned one of the highest U-Index speed figures. So on humanity.com, they have their own speed figures, like kind of like Byers or Timeform. She has the highest average speed figure of any horse in the race. And her current expected odds are 45.1 decimal odds. So
now you're talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely going to be using her on some tickets for sure.
Love it. One to bring in at a price along with the three we talked about. Should point out that the PPs will be available Saturday afternoon over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com more analysis from Alex and the team. You can find Alex's pedigree analysis on the site as well. Also, an excellent follow on Twitter talking racing around the world. Alex, where can people find you on there?
Yeah, thank you. You can find me at HMLAA, or Hemla, as I affectionately call my handle. And yeah, please find me on Instagram and Twitter as well, on the same handle.
Excellent. Alex, we're going to have you back on real soon. Really appreciate you, and appreciate you reminding me that you can kind of read Japanese, and that you essentially taught yourself Japanese so you could learn more about Japanese racing and play video games. It's just the coolest fact.
You got it. New game just came out last week. Super excited to play Winning Post 2024.
We'll get a review the next time you're on these airwaves. Alex, till the next time, really appreciate you.
Thank you, Pete. Have a good one.
Next up on the show, we have a change of scenery. I'm out of the Airbnb in Lexington and over at Blue Door Smokehouse, where we're filming the latest in our Perfect Trip video series. If you hear any background, that's what that's all about. But really excited for this next segment because we have a returning partner that I'm really excited about getting to learn more about this racing, because there's some very player-friendly stuff happening at Hawthorne Racecourse. We're going to talk about how the new meet has been going and what some of the opportunities are over there with a guy who's been on these airwaves before and helped us out with various projects on the In the Money media side. He's Jim Miller. Jim, what's going on, my man?
Peter, I'll tell you, it's been a fun start to the meet. It's good to be back partnering with you guys. Good to get any information out that we can to anybody, but I'll tell you, great start to the meet. Excited about it, and just so many things to look forward to as well.
Let's start with what's been going on at the meet so far. People have been betting. You've had some strong field sizes, and I think it's only going to get better as some of these other tracks close and more horses start heading back up to the Illinois area. But give us a little bit of a recap on how it's gone down so far.
Yeah, in the meet, we changed the schedule a little bit this year compared to last year, where we opened up just a little bit earlier. We're opening up the third week of March, but the big thing is we extended on the tail end. So last year, we ended the first week of September, and it left a lot of those horsemen in limbo a little bit that were looking for a winter destination. So this year, we extended 6 weeks further, going to the second week of October. So what it's done now, it's kind of created that circuit for horsemen that, say, want to go down to New Orleans, want to go to Tampa, want to race at Oaklawn, where now they give the horses that time off at the end of our meet, going into the start of their meet, and then they can basically race through consistently for 10, 11 months. So you've seen an increase in stall applications. We've seen an increase in horse population, and it definitely transitions to what you see on the racetrack, because it's a lot more larger fields. It's a little bit more of a quality type of racing too. And when you can combine those two, it makes for some really good betting cards as well.
And then the other leg on the stool is having player-friendly initiatives, which I know you have a lot of. We've talked a lot on these airwaves over the years about your contest program, but I'm very intrigued by a new wager you guys are presenting this year. From a horse player point of view, what do you think the most interesting aspects of this Hawthorne meet are?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, let's start on the player end of things, because the players are so important. Without the players, we don't have this great industry too. So the first thing that we brought back that we tested out last year was the 12% takeout on win play show wagers. And that's something where we were questioned quite a bit, saying, is this really going to work? Are you going to get enough handle to offset the drop and takeout? Well, it definitely worked last year, and it's shown to work even more this year. So we've continued it, and we hope it's going to be a trend within the industry, because it is a very player-friendly format. But then after that, we introduced as well the 8% place pick all. So what this is a wager, a place pick 8. This is a wager that's going to cover the first 8 races on the card. It's a $1 wager, but it's going to be providing a payout each and every day when we're getting into the month of April. And we've been tweaking the wager a little bit here and there. But what it does is, we know we're not going to make a lot on this wager alone, but when you can expose bettors to the first 8 races on your card, then you get that incremental wagering covering the remainder of those races. So that's what we've seen thus far this meet, is you're getting people that'll dabble a little bit on this wager, but then they watch the remainder of your card. So you get more eyes on the card, more eyes to focus on your races at Hawthorne. And I think that's something that's really going to expand as the meet progresses.
I love the bet. I love the idea of a churn bet. You know, you have an opportunity to hit, even though it's an 8-leg sequence, still the place element of it, I think, gives you an opportunity to have some more hits and keep some action going. And it's fun, gives you that reason to look at the whole card. And then, yeah, of course, you're going to find your other opportunities to play. We're going to do a lot more on strategies for the place pick all. I'm really intrigued by that. But we'll put a pin in that for now and save it for for another show. What we're going to do here is talk about the late pick four on Saturday at Hawthorne. It kicks off with race number 6 at 6 o'clock Eastern. We've got a maiden claimer here for Phillies 3 and up, going 5.5 on the dirt. Very curious to get your thoughts. At my quick look of the race, I thought that the 5-runner, Maggie E., might be loose. Do you have any use for her in this spot, or does somebody else catch your fancy?
Yeah, it's a fun sequence. Fields of 10, 10, 11, and 11 for the late pick four, and we've had minimal scratches. And it's going to be a beautiful day Saturday, too. Maggie E. was an intriguing horse for me, but intriguing for a couple of different angles, because Maggie E. is going to take a lot of action just because all the speed figures put this horse in the mix. But then 0 for 19 lifetime can scare you off a little bit. I went to the inside horse, the one, that's Ruth of Judah. This one comes from the barn of Louis Roussel, and Louis is a guy who last year stabled at Horseshoe Indianapolis and raced some horses here at Hawthorne. This year he's back at Hawthorne, 25 horses here, and he spots them to win. He's putting these horses in a spot where they're going to have that chance to make a check. If they get claimed, they get claimed. But Ruth of Judah is one of those that comes in from a race in New Orleans that I thought was an improved effort in their last out. They got here about 10 days ago to Hawthorne, and you see a really quick 3/8 of a mile drill. 34-2 is humming here at Hawthorne. You get the inside. Really, the only option is to get out there and go, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think Ruth of Judah beats everybody at the top and wires this field for race 6.
It's a compelling case, and it is true. It's sometimes hard to swallow those career maidens in this spot. You know, intriguing on pace figures, but your case is moving me to want to use both. How's the inside been playing at Hawthorne? Any noticeable track biases so far this meet?
It's been interesting. So no noticeable biases in regards to inside, outside, speed, or back. But the one thing you do notice is the riders that are willing to save ground are those riders that are going to do well. And you see some of these veteran jocks that do know kind of how that track plays. But when we've seen some new faces come in, they're still kind of learning things. And what you've seen is oftentimes you hit the quarter pole and there's a couple of guys that are drifting out off the rail. And then those that have the ability to save that ground just kind of slip through on the inside and do really well. And for many years, it was Tim Thornton on the circuit. Tim's down in Louisiana now. But a guy that's riding this track really well to watch out for is Eduardo Gallardo. He's learned this very quickly. He's come in with some strong barns this meet, and he's riding well too. So the inside can be favorable just because it's a really long stretch here at Hawthorne. So anytime you can save ground is going to help.
Makes perfect sense. Let's move on to race number 7. We've got an allowance race going 1.70 miles on the dirt and a field of 10 going postward. One runner that caught my eye in here who I thought might get a good trip towards the front, been competitive at similar levels, maybe even a little bit better quality starter allowance the last time at the fairgrounds, was the 5-runner Unified Dreams. Curious, though, to get your expert take on what we're going to see in this race at Hawthorne.
This is one of those spread races, Peter, because you can go so many different ways. You get Unified Dreams coming in from New Orleans, the 4-horse Ardenwood from New Orleans, the 3 regular guy coming in from New Orleans, and the 8 Protonic Power. And you have to use all of those horses because they're all in with a shot. Ardenwood, the 4, is a horse that should be able to show some speed. Unified Dreams is going to get a perfect stalking trip. But Protonic Power is the horse that I gave the nod to. This is a horse that was racing really well here last year and was typically a little bit more of a turf horse throughout the course of the year last year. And then you've seen some recent dirt starts. There was a dirt start against $50,000 optional company last December in New Orleans. That was a really good effort and victory. That last out was a good, solid performance, too. But pace is going to make the race. Unified Dreams will get a great trip. Ardenwood probably is the one carving out the fractions. The biggest key to the race in here, Peter, is probably the 2, Urine and Corey. And this is a horse that can't win, I don't think. But it is a horse that could throw everybody for a loop if they're hustled away and quarter-horsed out of there to keep the pace honest up front. Protonic Power will be my top pick, but yeah, you're probably going to have to go 4 or 5 deep in that spot.
I wrote down 8, 4, and 5 as the numbers for you. Any others you want to number check specifically the only, as ones you might
Sure, the only other one that you may want to look at is the 10 in there. Read the Cliff Notes, and this is an older horse, but look at the record over the racetrack. 10 victories at Hawthorne on the course of Read the Cliff Notes' career. He's just a different racehorse here. He tries hard, has some tactical speed, and from the outside, he's probably going to have to be hustled along a little bit to get positioned into that first turn.
another intriguing allowance race in race number 8. We're going a mile and 70 once again. And again, nice full field, 11 looking to go postward. Got a sizable favorite in the likes of Camp Daddy here, morning line-wise anyway, at 8-5. I wanted to try to tell you a story about, you mentioned about Gallardo riding well. I thought the 7 Dapper Dude at 10-1 on the morning line was a little bit interesting. This horse has been probably a little bit better, to say the least, on the turf in terms of body of work, but maybe a talented runner who I thought could at least try to get a piece in this spot. Where is your eye drawn in race number 8?
Yeah, you're going to get a price on that horse for sure, because this is an intriguing race too. Camp Daddy scared me a little bit, and I lay the morning line. I lay the horse at 8-5, but all those figures are all in sprint races. And when you're looking to go two turns here, it does kind of change the logic. I think both Eduardo Rodriguez horses can be a factor. The 2, Path to Success, and the 7, Dapper Dude. I think Path to Success rates a little bit closer in here. Dapper Dude ran kind of a sneaky good race in that last out too, closing up some ground late. You have to put both of those in the mix. I think 2 others to include in here, Peter. The 8, Simple Logic, and Simple Logic absolutely hates to win. But if you look at the last time Orlando Mojica rode this horse on the main track, it was last July here at Hawthorne. He did something different running style-wise. He put this horse out on the lead, and the horse was clear in the lane and almost held on. And then watch out on the outside, the 11. It was this big. This one from the barn of trainer John Arnett. Arnett, another Louisiana guy. He has 40 horses in here at Hawthorne this meeting. He's off to a great start. They'll try to clear from the outside and be a factor. Another race where you have to spread, but I think both Eduardo Rodriguez horses are definitely in with a shot.
I wrote it down with the 2 and the 7 on the A line, the 8 and the 11 on the B line. Yep. As we proceed on to our nightcap, we've got some bread and butter stuff. Nickel Claimers going 5.5, 11 heading to post. I was attracted to a horse who, if ready off the break, has a name that might describe the running style I'd like to see. The 2, Winging Ways, was the one that caught my eye. But when it comes to this nightcap and all these late picks at Hawthorne on Saturday, Jim, we'll ask you the key question. How are we going to get paid?
Well, we think similarly in here, because I think you can get some prices. Winging Ways is a horse that I'm going to use. There are a couple others that can show speed and Hurt So Bad and Ali and Abby along the inside. But Winging Ways is on my ticket because this one does have a little bit of back class and a little bit of success over the track. A horse, though, Peter, that I like a lot in this spot, and it may not look like it on paper, is the 5. That's Rushing to Win. This one from the barn of Tanner Tracy. And you look at Rushing to Win's races last year, they were against so much better company. But then you really get scared off because you're coming in off 3 bad performances and a long layoff. But here's the thing. There's a reason the horse was definitely on the bench, and there's a reason the horse is dropping in for the 5. Those will scare you, but Tanner Tracy has gotten consistent workouts out of this horse. And you're not seeing 1 or 2 works coming in. You're seeing 5 works over the track coming in. So it seems like he might have figured things out a little bit. You're going to get some pace to run after. 5.5 furlongs should be enough to run into, too. I think Rushing to Win can possibly pick him off late in the lane.
I love that case, and that's such a good point. At this level, seeing that kind of work track record, that's got to be worth something. What numbers for you to go with the 5? 5-2, did you want to throw anything else in there?
Yeah, 5-2. The other one that I'm going to throw in at a price for you is the 4. That's Perfect Wager. This horse was not really ready to go 2 turns in that last out, but they wheel back quickly, come back to the sprint, should have no problem with fitness. And again, there should be enough pace to close into, and this is one that will be closing late at a price.
Great stuff, Jim. Really appreciate it. Obviously, folks should be paying attention to this Hawthorne racing. We're going to be covering a lot of it in the coming weeks. Jim, very excited to have you back. Where can folks find more of your work if they want to learn more about Hawthorne and follow along with what promises to be a very exciting meet?
It will be an exciting meet. Go to the website, hawthornracecourse.com. We have a newly revamped website with a mobile app as well. We do supply our race replays for free on there. And then selections are there each and every day. I give an expanded analysis of each and every race here at Hawthorne, but it is definitely worth checking out. And then seeing the contest stuff too. We're going to send 20-plus players to the NHC this year. We have Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge players, and there's so many different ways you can qualify.
What about social media? Where can folks find you on there?
Social media, best place to find me is at Hawthorne Gym. If you have any questions, go right there and ask me, direct message me. I throw out different things in regards to analysis, things I see in the paddock as well. But at Hawthorne Gym on X, you can find me right there.
great stuff. We're also going to be having some In the Money media coverage. Our old friend Howard Kravitz, from who does a fantastic job on his own set of podcasts, etc. This is his home circuit. He's going to be doing daily analysis. He did some stuff for us a few years ago for Canterbury and was very, very popular. We encourage folks to read Jim's analysis every day, read Howard's analysis. You'll become get enough of that institutional knowledge to make you feel at home betting the Hawthorne product, even if you're new to it. Jim, we'll have you back real soon. Really appreciate your time today.
You got it. Thanks, Peter. Have a great weekend.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank all of today's guests and the various folks who've helped along the way in terms of getting this job done, this show done, especially our friends over at Blue Door Smokehouse. We'll shout them out again, as well as Josh and Mike, going to see the results of this perfect trip video on our YouTube channel very soon. Not that soon, though. Got to give the guys a few days off when they get back to Minnesota. Anyway, that's another story. What else? We'll thank our founding partners, our friends over at 10 Strike Racing. Going to get to see Marshall Graham this weekend. That's going to be a ton of fun. Also, Kim Weir and her Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. Great new charity we've been supporting. Going to be hearing a lot more about them through the course of the summer. Going to be doing some fun fundraising stuff as well. To learn more about them and their mission, inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you for making these shows so much fun to do. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!